in life for free. But you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. That's what I want. That's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill. But your love won't pay my bills. I want money.
Well, welcome back to Sax and Jax. I'm Tom Howe. She's AV on the board. We have Mr. Brennan with us. We have the S&P futures up, looks like around 30. The Dow's coming back about 300. S&P futures up 55, sorry. So we're coming back some of the way from yesterday. But yesterday was one of the biggest down days, really, in the history. Well, it was the biggest Dow down day ever. So what do you think of that, Brennan? Are you with us?
I am with you. It is an amazing time.
Yeah, and I had to go to see a couple of my buddies at the bars last night, you know, last night, so...
last night.
Yeah.
It's like you're going on a long trip.
Well, you know, it's one of these things where everybody now, every politician, in San Francisco, you're not supposed to leave your house. We had people on CNBC yesterday doing the, why don't we just... set, you know, shut the whole economy down for 2 months. These, of course, guys are going to get paid, Brendan.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I noticed that the people on Squawk Box today were working from home. They had their cameras set up at home, and were participating that way.
Well, yeah, I mean,
kind of like what we're doing.
Yeah, sort of like, well, you are. I'm in. Nobody out. I mean, there's nobody here. So you're just as lonely here as you are at home, for God's sake. But I don't see how we can deal with our customers on a day like yesterday. How can you be a securities firm that's not here on a day like yesterday?
Yeah, I understand that. And there are critical businesses that have to keep having people there. I mean, you think about firemen, policemen, telephone people, all those. Think about all the people in charge of robocalls.
Well, yeah, and of course, our esteemed governor, he's going to tell you can't do anything else, but he's going to have his election.
Yeah, yeah. That's a tough spot. I mean, it really is a tough spot for all of the governors. I know that Mike DeWine in Ohio has already postponed the election in Ohio, but that's going to be challenged. That is being challenged. The other ones, you know, if you have some advance warning, I think that they could do that, like they're doing in Louisiana, and I think maybe Georgia. But when it came right on the cusp of this, it's really hard to change things on such short notice. But it's gonna skew the election results, and it's going to, I think, give Bernie a reason to stay in a little bit longer.
Well, I think it always, whenever something bad happened like this, I think it always skews the results for the people who have the city workers in their pockets, because they get the day off to go. Mm-hmm. Essentially.
Well, city workers no longer get the day off. They used to, but I don't think they do anymore.
County workers.
They get a 2-hour period where they can go vote sometime during the day, but it's not the full day off like it used to. Although, you used to know who was in which camp on election day, because so-and-so would always have the day off to be a precinct worker, whichever
right.
that meant. But it wasn't clear if they meant that they were a poll watcher monitoring everything, or if they were a precinct worker who was driving the aldermen's people or committeemen's people to the voting booths.
Well, I think when you have these elections in mid-March on St. Patrick's Day, they used to mean something. The whole idea is they have less people out. They have, if you come in with a captive number of people, it just increases your chances.
Oh yeah, yeah. When you've got a good ground organization, you want horrible weather because you know your people will show up.
Right.
And that's why I think that today, in many states, this is going to be a really good day, a better day than it would have been otherwise for Bernie, because he's got hardcore Bernie bros who will come out and vote.
Well, I don't know what I don't think Bernie really hangs in there all the way, but you know, we'll
see. Shouldn't really under normal circumstances. Today should be his last day.
Yet, the idea that they just concede this to Biden is beyond incredible, too. But that's the best we could do.
Yeah, I agree with that. I wish there were a stronger candidate for the Democrats to make it more of a race. But we'll see how it all plays out. It's going to get worse if the longer that Bernie stays in, well, you know, I've got two thoughts on that. First, it's going to be longer. It's going to seem longer if Bernie stays in because he's going to just continue the divide. And the longer he stays in, the less likely it is that his followers will support Biden. I think that's a major issue for the Democrats right now. And unlike 16, because in 16, Bernie had a legitimate claim that the nomination was stolen from him because of the way that the superdelegates were rigged in the first ballot and some of the other shenanigans that happened during the election. This time they're playing by Bernie's rules, and he's still falling more and more behind. He also said, remember at the debate, that whoever's leading with the delegate count at the convention, even on the first ballot, should get the nomination, even if they're not at the required amount of the 1191. That's not going to happen in his favor, and now the question is, will he drop out before then?
Well, what do you make of, I mean, the world is changing because of this virus thing, and I take what everything's saying, all people are saying to heart. I find a combination of, you know, a dangerous disease that people still don't really know what to make of, doesn't
mm-hmm.
matter. Our Center of Disease Control people, some of them look like buffoons to me. Some don't, and everybody has an opinion, and yet I don't see, it's almost like, in some ways it's like class warfare. To me it's a total follow-up, Brendan, and the continual theme, one of the themes of the show certainly is the theme of me. The people who are in elected office seem to have zero concept of about 70% of their populace and what they go through on a day-to-day basis. And every single time there's an issue, a crisis, it just plays out the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the idea of driving your interest rates to zero without cutting credit card rates, you know, I mean, to me is almost laughable. And yet,
that's one of the themes of Trump for years now, that he wants the rates to be at zero. Now he's got his way. But now there's no more room to maneuver. He's pretty much stuck with this for the duration. He's shot his wad on this. I agree with you also about the people on the CDC. It's incredible to me. But I think anything that Tony Fauci says, for the most part, well, I'd say a good part of what he says, you have to believe, because it's contrary to what the White House and certainly the president is saying, sometimes in front of the president, and yet he's not being fired. When you look at what some of the other folks are saying, like the Surgeon General and like that woman, Dr. Bricks, and Mike Pence, their credibility is pretty bad right now.
Well, I would agree. I'm just sort of curious as to what there doesn't seem to be any. The two people I've listened to is the one that our girl AV sent me the podcast on that guy. I listened to the guy from DuPage County. I mean, it's very clear that the older section of the population, people in nursing homes and so forth, are very susceptible. And yet the younger people, would almost be, you know, I mean, it's essentially a mild cold for a lot of them.
For a lot of them, yes.
And people have to be someplace, right? if you can't go to a saloon, you're going to go to the beach. If you can't go to the beach, there's gonna be eight people sitting in one apartment. I don't know where everybody expects everybody to be. You know,
the whole idea of this is not that everybody has to be completely isolated in their own 3,000-foot apartment or something like that. The idea is that you try to minimize the amount of contact.
Whoa! Whose idea? Whose idea? In San Francisco, you can't leave your house.
I know.
But
if you've got multiple people living there, they're not saying one person has to move out, the other person can stay there.
What do you mean? There might be one person. That might be next.
Contact for those who have been exposed, so they don't expose others.
But that might be next. Somebody might say, the police are coming over, and if you're not all in separate rooms when we get there, we're going to arrest you.
I don't think we're there yet.
Where do you think we get by the day? Every day it gets more invasive onto people.
Well, that's true, but I don't think you're going to have police knocking at the door seeing if everybody's in a separate room.
When they came out with the thing on Sunday, about which is now only Tuesday, about the bars can only have half as many as their sign says they could have. And no more than 100 or no more than 50, whatever it was, no matter how big the place was. The police were at the Tripoli Tap half hour, walking in, looking at the thing, telling the guy that they'd be watching and blah, blah, blah. They can't come close to a traffic stop. They can't arrest anybody on the street. They can't stop a murder. But they were there in a Tripoli Tap in a half hour of that announcement. And then and an hour later, of course, they said, no, we're going to close all bars and restaurants because the kids weren't paying attention to it. You know what, Brendan? This is America, and if a working man's family or a bartender's family and that guy, if he's 25 years old, the danger to that person in their own mind by far is 2 months without pay is way worse than a cold.
No, I understand that, and that's a severe dilemma, is the economic impact on the country, the economy locally in Chicago and nationally and internationally. I agree with that, and it has to be a balancing act as to whether left unabated the virus would cause more damage than what's happened economically right now. I understand that from both sides.
And I'm not so sure we're getting a straight enough story. It's not like I don't have all the stats, so I'm just saying nobody seems to know what the stats are. So it might be the last thing you want to do is if you think you've lost control of it, which I think some people think they have.
Mm-hmm.
If you think you've lost control of it, you'd absolutely batten down the hatches on the older people. You get as much equipment as you can available if you have to move these people to, you know, triage areas. Then you try and get people who've already had the vaccine and have antibodies to take care of them, so you don't have to worry about them, right? And there should be enough
people
around.
Well, there is no vaccine, and we're not sure yet what happens to the bloodstream of those who have recovered, whether their blood can be used. I saw the article you sent yesterday, and that's a very interesting article, but I don't think that's been proven yet scientifically. And to your other point, I think that goes directly to the credibility of the CDC, Dr. Fauci, and people in the White House administration, that if you really want to pull people together, I mean, think of World War II. Think of the idea behind World War II or the Great Depression. We're all in this together, but we have the same facts. It's incredible to me that the White House is trying to dismiss this as, you know, we've got 15 people, soon it'll be down to zero, this will pass pretty quickly. It's pretty evident that it's not going to pass pretty quickly.
No.
And we keep hearing that the worst is yet to come. Yet, people from the CDC that are coming up, like this Dr. Bricks and the Surgeon General, are not giving it enough support, I think, enough information that's accurate, that is what they say has been disputed by other sources in relatively short order. And yet, there's no impetus behind saying, we've got to pull together. What I said before was wrong. And I'm thinking about yesterday when Trump said his handling of this is a 10. I mean, give me a break. That cannot be true.
What was it, 10?
His handling of this coronavirus epidemic.
Hey, Alan Greenspan gave himself an A+ for his career in the office.
Yeah, I know that. But that's not the kind of sycophantic statement that we need in the case of a crisis like this. He's got to be able to say, look, when I said there were 15 cases and it was going to be down to zero, that's proven wrong. Here's the information we've got.
Brandon,
where we're going right now.
These are men of enormous ego.
And I know he is.
Yeah, I mean,
it's dangerous for the country.
It's one thing about a traitor, a guy like me who's been doing this. I mean, there is an ego that I will drive to get the best knowledge I can for my clients to do the best job. But there's no ego that I can make 10 trades in a day and have all of them be good. That got slapped out of me 40 years ago. I mean, there's no ego that at the end of a week like last week that I get an A paper that every single trade was correct.
That's true. And no matter what profession you're in, I mean, when you look at some lawyers making arguments in trials, you know that they're ludicrous, that they don't make any sense at all. Like the guy who shot Paul Bauer that was convicted last week, who was talking about a second gunman when all six of the shell casings that were found in the stairwell were from his gun. Two of the shots that came from his gun would have killed him immediately just by themselves, and he's trying to claim self-defense. I mean, you lose credibility when you make arguments like that. And what the president is trying to do right now with his statements, I think, has lost all credibility. Now, admittedly, he did not have much credibility in my eyes before this, but this is even much worse. And the fact that he can't even admit that there's a crisis and he has made some mistakes along the way, I have no faith in his ability to lead us through this crisis.
I think what you don't want to have happen, because this is one of those things, you know, I don't think it's time to throw up the white flag at this disease yet. Just say, you know, whatever happens, happens. But what you don't want to do is shut the whole place down in August and everybody get it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's part of the balancing act right now, that it really is a question of overwhelming the health system with the number of beds we have, but more importantly, with doctors and nurses who are on the front lines of dealing with patients coming in, and first to make sure that they stay as healthy as possible and can avoid it if possible. Second, to make sure that there's enough equipment, beds, and ventilators.
Well, we know they're not. We know there isn't. That's the whole point.
Here's an example of what's even worse. All this touting about having the tests coming out that Washington has been proposing, and a few weeks ago when Trump said, if you want a test, you can get a test. There was a program on last night in which the governor of Connecticut was interviewed. And he had an example of over 200 emergency room nurses who were taken off duty because they had been exposed to somebody who had the virus. Now, that's one thing that they were exposed, but he is unable to get tests. The hospitals are unable to get tests to see if those nurses have, in fact, the virus. If they haven't got the virus, they can potentially go back to work. But right now, they cannot even get tested to see if they have the virus to put them back in or to have them get treatment.
Well, that's ludicrous. That's easy. It's easy, Brendan. You go into the United Center and you put them in Bulls uniforms, and all the tests will be there.
Yeah, there could be something about that.
You know, but some of the logic, I don't get. They talk about the ventilators, and we know how many ventilators they have, and they don't have enough ventilators in Italy. That's the big problem. Because all these people are just dying, right? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a couple other ways you can help people breathe. Ones of, you know, I'm not the doctor, but the issue with those is that, you aspirate into the air. Not aspirate. Aspirate means you throw up it. You breathe out into the air. So it's not a closed system. So you don't want to, if somebody has it, they're in danger of infecting other people.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what, Brendan? That's easy. You take a temporary hospital, or you take a wing of the hospital, or a separate building, or you put people back in Old County, or whatever you do. Everybody in the place has got it. So what's the difference? And if you have nurses that are exposed that have it, let them go in there. They can't get it again.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know what happens when you've contracted, and even if you've been, if you go through the process and you're cured, even if it's a mild case, we don't know what happens next. We don't know if you can get it.
There's starting to be some pretty strong literature on that. I was reading a lot of it this weekend. I didn't send it to you. I should have. They said that the virus stays in your body fairly long, but it drops down to a level where you're no longer contagious to people. But it's hanging in there. It's almost like a chickenpox virus. But not as long as chickenpox. But then the good news is your body develops pretty serious immunities to it. The antibodies.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good news. Is that the basis for the article you sent me about
yes.
drawing blood from somebody who's recovered and injecting into
right.
others to
well,
kind
you,
of
you, you inject
immunize
just
them?
The, just the plasma, not the blood. So okay. You don't have to worry about typing or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially one of the cures that they found in 1918. But it hasn't been used in a long time. It's like an old cure.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens, for people don't know what the hell I'm talking about, is you take blood from somebody who's already had the disease and recovered, and they have the antibodies in there, and you use the plasma to inject in other people. Now, the plasma mm-hmm. has the antibodies of the person that you got the plasma from.
That's a very interesting argument. That would be nice if it proved true, but I think right now we're scrambling and we don't have enough information.
But it's a very old technology.
That's going on right now.
It's a very old technology. You probably can't patent it. You can't charge a lot for it. Nobody wants it.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want something you can't bat and charge an arm and a leg for?
That's right. Even if it's going to save lives immediately.
But, you know, it's very interesting. I talked to the listening. They were most of the talking. Imagine that with me there. Two lawyers. And this thing, you know, the people that make these decisions, Brendan, and, I'm not saying I wouldn't do the same thing. But at least I would think about it, I think, differently and longer. I mean, shutting down the court system. Good idea, bad idea, I don't know. But then coming out, the people making the decisions and all those people around them are all paid by the rest of us. And they're going to get paid at home. Mm-hmm. All the people that they're basically tossing out to the wolves are not like that. And it's not just waitresses. Mm-hmm. It's not just bartenders. Makes it seem like, you know, every time I talk about it's restaurants. It's people. These guys, one guy had a law firm. He's got 50 lawyers. He goes, mm-hmm. What are we going to do? We can't go to court. He goes,
you're right. And you know, the guy who works in the mailroom at a law firm cannot work remotely from home.
Well, we were helping this one guy last night, giving him some ideas. He goes, I've got like 40 partners. You know, a few of them are bleeps, but they're good lawyers, so we keep them as partners. He goes, what I want to do, I goes, it's my firm. I said, I want to get everybody together, and I want to cut everybody's salary by 20% on the partners, mm-hmm. and I want mm-hmm. to keep the other people that are making 40 grand a year, and I want to cut them. How can we cut them to 36 grand? And you can't do that. You know,
right. No, I think that's a good solution.
And he says to me, what do you think? And I said, I think if you're in charge, that's the plan, and you're rolling with it. If somebody comes up with something better, but I'm not thinking of anything any better. At the end of the month, you know, if it turns out you're still able to bill stuff and whatever, I said, you know, but I mean, at this point, this is not a democracy. I mean, that's what has to happen. I mean, I'm not an autocratic guy, but what's the bitch? What can you say?
Well, I don't see that as autocratic. I mean, I think that for the benefit of the firm, all of the partners should agree to something like that. I think that's fair and equitable. The other thing that I'd propose, and this is pretty radical, but I would try to have a big bank like J.P. Morgan or Morgan Stanley or Bank of America or Wells Fargo or all of these guys collectively say, we're going to put a moratorium on all mortgage payments or all, you know, trickle down so that for the foreseeable future, whether it's a month or 2 months or 3 months, we don't expect you to make your mortgage payment because of this crisis. And we're not going to continue to accrue interest for these 3 months. We'll freeze it exactly where it is right now. That relieves some of the burden for the commercial leaseholder. And now, I also mean that the commercial landlord would have to do the same thing for his tenants and, you know, so on down the line. For the immediate future, for the benefit of the country.
Oh, they won't
just
do
put
it.
Put everything on hold.
But you're not gonna. There's always gonna be somebody who's gonna be on the end of the bench, like the Three Stooges when they're in a football thing, and Curly kept getting knocked off the end of the bench.
Mm-hmm.
There's
yeah.
always. I mean, why? You know, how do you give the? I mean, if I drop the rates to zero, the first thing I'm gonna say is, by the way, the rate is now 12%, and this month nobody charges interest on credit card account. They're never mm-hmm. going to do that, Brendan. They're never going to do that. It's Jay Pritzker and the thieves around him that work for the state, they know they're always going to get paid. It's like the guy, Sullivan on CNBC last night. Here's a guy making a boatload of money at CNBC. He's going to get paid. He's at home. And he's ranting about how, why don't we just shut the entire economy down for, nobody leaves their house for a month and knock this thing out. Well, you're mm-hmm. going to have people that house is going to be gone at the end of the month.
No, but that I'm approaching this from the other end. What I'm saying is, because I understand that by shutting down the economy, in part the way that we've done already, that it is going to be bad for the economy. It's going to be bad for the worker who, you know, what are the statistics that 40-45% of the people cannot afford a $500 emergency for a medical cost if it happens?
Oh, it's like half the country.
This is a reality of something similar to that. This is a medical emergency type of a thing that they cannot prepare for. And if they're not working because their restaurant or bar is shut down, then they're not going to have the replenishment money. So one of the things that I'm suggesting right now is that not by government edict, not from Pritzker, not from Trump, not from any other person like that, saying that they have to do this, but banks saying this is a major crisis.
No, you know what? Brendan,
we are going to force all.
We got to let you go here in a sec, but you know what? I'm sorry, bud, that'll never happen. If you, the same people you just gave the money to, you're saying, I'm giving it to you if you do this. If you don't do that, they're not going to say a word.
Mm-hmm.
You think so? Since when do these guys become philanthropic?
No, but my point is, in a crisis like this, that's what should happen.
Well, I think as a leader, you have to tell them, I'm giving you something, you're doing something for me.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, buddy.
That's called the art of the deal, isn't it?
I don't think we need you later, but be near the phone.
Okay.
All right, bud. SP Futures up 27. NASDAQ Futures up 129. We've got 2 months going here. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering 3 of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blown away by Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alshie's AV. SP Futures now only up 6. That's very disappointing after yesterday. NASDAQ Futures up 54. So not a whole lot good there. I mean, we were up pretty heavy last night. Now not. Dow up 200. We're setting to bounce, but so far, but right now it's a dead cat bounce. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 49.6%. FTSE down 45.9%, so not much. Gekaran down 17.4. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei, which is up 9, call that flat. Shanghai down 9, that's 0.3%. Got Hang Seng up 200, that's 0.8%. Australian stocks are up like 6%. Philippines suspend trading. It's kind of crazy. We just review on yesterday the damages. Dow down 29.97. That's 12.9%. S&P down 324. That's 12%. NASDAQ down 970. That's 12%. So really, really ugly. I mean, we could say butt ugly. It's real. I don't know. Other than the crash, there were maybe only a couple of days that were that bad percentage-wise. I think maybe the 29 and 87 might be the only ones. Yesterday was worse than, worse than Kennedy's assassination, you know, Reagan getting shot, Eisenhower heart attack. I mean, we're in rarefied air here. 10-year yield, 0.81, which is interesting since it's actually up since the Fed did their thing the other day. The Bund is down to minus 0.38, was minus 0.79 the other day, so that's going to be the other way as well, what Trump wants to go. And Japan is 0.0001 negative. So they're just a really, really close to being positive. So very strange. Gold down $15, 1471. Silver down 64 cents. Silver getting bashed, 1217. It was over 17, I'm going to say a week and a half ago. Copper, 236. Is they could say what they want out of China, but that economy is not coming back if you're one who looks at the copper. And then what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, and the only person in the world who's probably happy there's no sports is our young lady, AV.
I'm not happy about everything that's going on.
No.
It's getting stressful, but we got to stay strong, right?
Stay strong.
Yes.
With your accent. What are moose and squirrel anyway?
So, despite the old situation, we are having a nice day today. The temperatures warming to around 50s, a bit lower by lakeside, and might get cloudy towards the night. The high of the day 50, and the lowest should be 35. 57 degrees currently in Phoenix, mostly sunny day, partially cloudy. Slight chance of rain, shower at night. The high of the day is 74, and the lowest 55. No informed delays in Chicago area besides the fire at Broadway and Hollywood Avenue. No details on that. And no delays on the map. Looks like a Christmas day. No people.
Looks like Christmas day, huh? Where's my present?
I am your present.
Oh God. Oh God.
Where's mine?
Yeah, but you come with a gang. If I ended up, you were my present, I'd end up with Tatiana and what's the other one's name?
Which one? I have a lot of friends.
I know the one with the Russian girl is hanging with you.
Nadia.
Yeah. See, there's three of them right there.
Presence by the
oh God, yeah, yeah. So what do we have? Hey Joel, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay, Chief. How you doing today?
All right, are you home or where are you? Are you home or where?
I am home. I have a daughter that I moved back from Virginia on Friday, and she has a cat. She's staying at my mother-in-law's house, so I've been spending some time over there with her and going back and forth to my house. So, but I've been working from home since last Monday.
Well, I guess that's good in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I just my wife works in the medical profession, and I just did feel like it was fair to go down to Benzinga and be around other people. So. And I work remote a lot anyway, so it's not that big of a change for me. Yeah, that's the way it is, Chief.
Well, it's these are the dark times, as they say.
I don't think I've ever seen any dark times.
No.
We are in a horrible situation, and it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better.
I think so, and I just get this real odd feeling that whoever you listen to, we don't have a the the we don't have the leadership that we should have at any level.
Nope. Nope. We should be, the country should be on a total lockdown for 2 weeks.
See, I don't necessarily agree with that, but.
Okay, well, we got to stop the spreading of this virus. And nothing really else matters except getting a vaccine. So those are the two things. If we can't find a vaccine, we have to stop it from spreading. All the financial stuff that's going on is very, very secondary. This is not a financial crisis. This is a health crisis. This is something that needs to be addressed. And it's too late to point fingers at administrations and people. It's beyond that point. The point now is we have to band together as a country and mitigate the damage. And it's hard to mitigate the damage when you don't know what how big it's going to be.
Well, I don't know that we know how big it is right now. That's my concern.
Exactly.
Well,
so if you have a problem and it's getting bigger, why don't you do everything you can to mitigate the problem? And to me, better to have people staying in their house for 2 weeks. I mean, a lot of people still don't get it. These younger generations, they don't get it. They're going, I mean, I don't know how it's changed over the last 24 hours, but when I was driving back from Virginia on Saturday night, the bars in Ann Arbor were packed, the bars in East Lansing were packed. You know, these kids feel invincible, and they're not. And they, even if they don't have symptoms, they can expose it to other people. So the bars and restaurants are closed here in Chicago, or here in Michigan. I don't know what it is in Illinois.
Yeah, we are here too.
But I think that if you don't think we're heading for a lockdown, or that a lockdown is needed, I think you're being naive.
Well, I don't know what the numbers are. Here's my concern, Joel, is I don't think that they know enough. The only people who seem to be able to get tests are basketball players. That's maybe a little harsh. And baseball players. If 500,000 people already have it, it's way too late. That you have to batten down. I agree with you that you absolutely have to put a moat between people and older people. But if all of a sudden, if you start testing around and 1 out of 10 people already has it, sending everybody home to sit with the rest of their family for 2 weeks, it's not going to help.
But if those people have it, then they're not exposing it to other people.
They're exposing it
to their family, but they're not exposing it to other people.
I'm saying if it's already out of the box, where I'm going with this, and I hope we're not there. By the way, I hope you're right and not me. We throw up the white flag to the regular flu and the common cold. We can't control it. My concern is the heads that are prevailing here, the people that are making the decisions, the people around them all get paid by somebody. Other people, if you're 25 years old and you're working construction or you're working in a bar, and you say to yourself, if I'm liable to get this, I've got a 1 in 10 chance of getting this, and it's going to be like a common cold to me, you're going to tell me I can't work for 2 months? It's not going to be 2 weeks, Joel. I mean,
but at least with people that have the symptoms, if they're contained for 2 weeks, then symptoms or no symptoms, you get over that 2 week period. But when you're walking around with it and it's just not too bad and you're not very sick, you're still exposing the other people to it.
Well,
the working thing, and what do you want me to say, Chief? I mean, how are we going to avoid a depression? I mean, do you want me to say that on the radio?
Yeah, well, I'm not so sure we're there.
No, we're not there yet because, it's, it takes some time to get there, but that's where we're headed.
You've got people, again, Joel, and by the way, I'm not arguing with on this thing because you probably...
I know. Chief, I am just besides myself.
Well,
you've talked to me many times over the years and stuff, and I'm just devastated. And I can't put it any other way.
I think in South Korea they got enough tests where they know the size of the problem.
Yeah.
We don't.
Right.
And
Chief, I really got to hop, okay? I'll talk to you guys.
You got to go? All right, bud. Take care of yourself.
Bye.
Sounds like he's in a A lot of stuff going on with him. That was AAV.
Yes.
Why don't you try to give Kenny a call a little early? Maybe he might be around. Well, maybe he's due to come out anyway. That's a shame for poor Joel. I don't know. If what he said could, I thought was going to work, I'd do it tomorrow. It's just an odd situation that we're in. The individual markets, I just want to bring people up to speed on some of the stuff I was looking at yesterday. I was looking at, we see the Federal Reserve putting the emergency repos to work last night and the night before, and you wonder, what do they need to do this for? I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm just telling you where stuff's trading. I was looking at some of the banks yesterday, and the banks have just been annihilated in this. And you wonder, why would they be necessarily in all that much trouble here unless somebody's having some problem paying? But I'm not really finding any piece of information like that out there. Hey, Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. Boy, a lot of people are in a lot of mess here. How are things by you? By you?
Yeah. Well, I'm in New York. Did I tell you that? I'm still in New York from when I came up here a week ago, because now, although I'm fine, I'm self-quarantining myself before I go back to Florida. So I'm sitting here all alone, listening to the news, sitting in this apartment trying to figure out what I'm doing all day long.
My suggestion to you is to put on a Knicks uniform. Go down to the Knicks clubhouse, and there'll be a test there, and they'll test you, and if you're okay, you can go home.
Well, you know, they've created in the city here, de Blasio has created complete hysteria because he came out the other day and he said, expect every New Yorker's been exposed to this virus. You know, every one of us. And in New York City, that's 8 million people,
yep.
Right? Plus. So before I go back to Florida, where my wife and other family members are, I said, okay, I bet my parents are down there. They're both in their 80s and stuff. And I go, you know what? I better just self-quarantine here, and I'll stay here for another week and make sure I'm good, and then I can go back.
From what I've been reading, you're gonna get your symptoms within 4 to 5 days.
Yeah, but I'm already here. I've been in New York for a week and a half, and, you know, I have no symptoms.
Well, so I'm going to say you don't have it.
Right, I would guess I don't either. But the way that the news makes it sound like, you know, people are dropping dead on the street, and that's not it at all.
Have you ever seen so many decisions being made by people that seemingly don't know what they're talking about?
Well, it gets frustrating for sure. No, but I haven't. But it certainly gets frustrating, right?
I don't. And they always seem to be made by people who, if they sit at home for 6 months, they're going to get paid, and they don't seem to realize that other people can't do that.
Right. Yeah, no, loud and clear.
I don't, I think the testing situation right now, Kenny, we almost need, you know, if it were me, of course, which it never is, in New York City, if de Blasio thinks that, I think he should get 1,000 tests, do a random sample, and just run out and test those 1,000 people. We should have some kind of an idea how big it is. We have none.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have absolutely zero idea how big it is right now.
Right. And we have zero idea how big it is right now. And then the other day, over the weekend, you know, Goldman came out and made this prediction that they expect 150 million Americans to become infected with this virus. That's half the population. Now, the infections don't mean death. So,
no.
So, you know, let's not get panicked. But, you know, they came out and said there's going to be 150 million people that are going to get this virus. And I'm sitting there scratching my head going, look, there's 6 billion people in China, and only 87,000 cases. Oh, there were only 87,000 cases. Now, they might say, well, that's because they didn't test the whole population. Okay, well, maybe, but you didn't see everybody in that country drop dead, right? So whatever it is, they're fighting through it, and it is what it is. But I think, you know, headlines like that do nothing but help, you know, stir the emotion and create unrest. And I think that's, like I said, de Blasio came out the other day and said, just expect, if you're in New York, expect that you've been exposed.
And so they want you to stay home. And yeah. We're one day away from separate bedrooms.
Right, right.
But, I guess what you do, if we can stop it, Kenny, I think we need to stop it. We can't stop the common cold.
Right.
We don't even try. So the last thing you want to do to a waitress, bartender, construction worker, whatever it is yeah. is say, you know, you got to stay home for 4 months, and then he gets it anyway, and he's out 4 months' pay.
Right.
I mean,
it's a problem. But here's my next question, though. What happened? Is this now the precedent? Is this now what the world has decided, that next year, if there's another strain of some virus that there's no vaccine for, all of a sudden the global economy comes to another standstill? I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, who is this now the precedent?
I was going to say, every time something like this happens, people test their ability to tell other people what to do.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, we went from in Illinois, and Pritzker came out and said this. I mean, here's a guy with nothing but money, and the people around him are going to get paid no matter what by other people, right? So, and you've got a Fed chair that drives rates to zero, remains absolutely gag silent about the credit card rates.
Yeah.
Never says boo about, I'm doing this for the banks. By the way, we're giving everybody a credit card holiday on their interest for a month.
Right.
Or anything like that. Any attempt to push it down the chain. Or Pritzker coming out and saying, all these bars and restaurants that were closed, and by the way, we're knocking a month off your property taxes. That would never happen.
Right.
So it's this constant thing from people in power, whether they're Democrat or Republican, that everybody else's money is all theirs. But as the Irish say, my Irish half, Kenny, not my Paisan side, you can't get blood out of a turnip. And we're getting to the point where we're trying to get blood out of a turnip. We've reached the end with some people. They don't have any more to give. And now you're telling them they're not going to work for a month without any sort of rent abatement, any property tax abatement. The only thing they did today was they said, since all the people in the Secretary of State's offices are going home and getting paid, I had to buy my new sticker for my license plate in March, I get 30 days. Doesn't mean I don't have to pay it. I just get 30 days. So that was at least nice of them. There's nobody there to go pay it to. They're not going to give me a ticket. So that was philanthropic of them, don't you think?
Go ahead.
I just get this this odd feeling. Well, anyway, what I was saying, Pritzker tells people that he wants less people in bars and so forth. So, of course, on Sunday morning, all the young kids here in Chicago head to the bar because St. Patrick's Day normally would be a parade. And so then he's outraged that people didn't listen to him.
Yeah.
So an hour later, he closes all the bars and restaurants. Didn't listen to him.
Yeah.
Why would – there was a kid from Korea where if you want to read about all this stuff, you got to read the stuff from Korea because they're the ones that are doing a better job. And by the way, they have 2.5 times as many respirators per population as we do. This is after 9/11, Kenny.
Yeah.
How the hell does that work? Where did that money go?
I don't know, and I'm not sure anyone's going to be able to tell you where that money went.
Yeah.
But, they've done the same thing around here, too. You saw in New Jersey, in Hoboken, they shut the whole place down. Teaneck, they shut the whole place down. In New York City, if the restaurants aren't closed yet, they're closing, right?
Yep. There's
some left open for takeout only. But everything else, is starting to shut down, right? So there's no place to go. There's nothing to do.
How many people in New York have ever cooked in their apartment?
That is a great question. I have no idea. I'm staying in this apartment in Manhattan. I went out yesterday because there's no place. You can't go out. Not that I want to go out and eat anyway, just because I'd rather cook myself. But no, you're right. I'm not really sure how many people in Manhattan really, really cook in their
apartment.
I don't think there's that many.
I'll bet 20% of the people, there's a bottle of orange juice and a six-pack in the fridge.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think that this stuff should be much more coordinated, Kenny. And I don't understand. There's a guy here at DuPage County. He said, what's missing in all this stuff is a huge plan to keep this away from the older people. He goes, closing schools to go home and get watch for grandma to watch the kids doesn't cut it. It's exactly what you don't want to do. It's exactly what you don't want to do.
Not at all.
I mean, I don't get the lack of coordination. And you get this idea that if you're closing the bars, I'm closing the restaurants, and then AV is going to close the health clubs. And I got a thing yesterday for my health club. We're stopping classes. We're stopping massages. I get that part because it's hard to do a massage from farther than 6 feet away. And we're stopping something else. Couldn't have been an hour later. Screw it, we're closing the club. Now tell me how, if I go stand by myself in the middle of the swimming pool, how I'm what I'm doing to anybody.
Right. Well, you know, listen, they shut the beaches down in Fort Lauderdale because it's spring break. They shut the beaches down, and I'm not really sure why hanging out on the beach or going in the ocean. I suppose, though, if you're congregating, right, if the kids, it's all spring vacation week, if they're congregating, I guess. But, you know, they're shutting everything down, even down, like, the public spaces.
Well, Kenny, they're idiots. They close Auburn University and tell people they have to leave. Guess what? There's 10,000 people on the beach in Lauderdale, butt to elbow. Imagine that at age 19.
I mean, right.
or 20. So, Kenny, we all got to be someplace. A lot of these kids don't have a home to go to. Where are they going to go?
Understood.
The only place, I don't know the only place, the first place I heard that made any sense whatsoever, and this is kind of rare for them, my alma mater, Notre Dame. We're stopping in-person classes, but you don't have to go home. And you can stay and be fed. If you got a home to go to, go. If not, we're not kicking you out. We're not sending you to somebody else's. I mean, you paid for your room and board. We're not booting you out. I mean, how can we boot you? I mean, it just may be, anyway, Kenny, I was saying about the Korean situation. The guy, they had somebody in quarantine, and he's 24. So they followed him the whole 14 to 20 days, and they're trying to figure out, has the antibodies and all that stuff. I mean, they're doing some real testing, which I'm saying somebody probably here is doing. We don't hear about anything like this. And the kid, they interviewed him. He goes, I've had colds that were worse. Because if I didn't happen to get tested, I never would have known.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you do about that. I don't know how you ever stop it. I mean, I think we need to test and find out how many people currently have it. And if the number
is... Yeah, well, I agree. But... Even if you find out how many people have it, it is not, let's be clear, it's not a death sentence.
No.
Now, if you're somebody that's got a compromised immune system, if you're an older person, if you've got other illnesses, yes, I agree, you're at risk, but you're at risk for the flu as well. And so you're at risk for so many other things. So this is not like this is, at least in my opinion, it's not like this is anything that should be creating this much hysteria. Other than the fact is, I guess they can't really identify a vaccine or they can't identify antivirals. Although Regeneron, did you see what just happened this morning? Regeneron at about 7 o'clock, they announced it on CNBC that, you know, Regeneron's close to identifying antibodies and that will neutralize the virus, and that they're looking to go to clinical trials in June. And so that's when you saw the futures go from negative to positive again. Because any bit of news, the market is so dislocated now because of, you know, all the algorithms and the trading and the broken trend lines and all that crap, is that it becomes psychotic. And news like that, though, would be viewed as fairly positive concerning this virus, and so you would expect the markets to rally. So let's just see how far that news goes today.
Well, I think they are going to rally some here, and I hope they do. Kenny, what is going on? You got your finger on the pulse of New York City. What is going on with these banks? I talked to my clients yesterday. I said, if we're going to do something here, I do, when things get like this, the volatility that gets up there, and do not do this strategy on your own. What I do for people, Kenny, is I do a covered straddle right. You know what that is. Well, if somebody says, I want to buy 1,000 shares of Bank America, I said, whoa. Let's buy 500, leave the cash there so you're not doing anything naked. Let's sell, for God's sake, Kenny, you can sell the 18 puts and the 21.5 calls for $2. It's for Friday. That's 10%
right.
In 4 days. I mean, if not bad, why are the puts this week a 180 volatility in Bank America? I told my clients, you know what? There's something going on here. The last time I saw the repos do it like this, was in 2008 when nobody lent money to Lehman. There's somebody out there that nobody will lend money to, and the Fed is having to do it every night. In addition to the interest rate play they're doing for the president, there's something else going on. Does somebody not have the collateral here, and are they covering for somebody? I think they are. I can't put my finger on who it is, but I think I'm going to miss a really good trade for my clients. I just got this weird feeling, Kenny, that as good as that is, it's too good.
Yeah, well, you know, you would know better than me. I don't play in that space so much as you do, so you've got a better handle on that in terms of your strategy. But there very well may be, because look, there are people that are concerned that something is amiss, right? Like the somebody said to me yesterday, the Treasury market's trading as if it's got, you know, B-rated liquidity. I'm not necessarily sure I agree with that, but I don't trade bonds as well either. So therefore, he's got a better view on it. But so that does raise the flag that, you know, is there something going on that we don't know yet that maybe somebody else does, i.e. the Fed. You saw what the New York Fed did yesterday, right? They came out with their own additional repo plan. I think it was $500 billion that the New York Fed is going to do just on its own, separate from what the Federal Reserve announced on Sunday evening when they made that surprise 5 p.m. Sunday evening call, which caught everybody, you know, off guard, which in my mind, all that did was raise the flag and signal desperation to make an announcement like that on Sunday evening at 5 o'clock when no one's really paying attention. Like, what was that about?
They're clearly in a desperation mode. It's driven the Japanese bond almost positive. They're going the opposite direction than the Fed wants them to.
Yeah,
I mean something is just not right. Can you, if you look at the VIX futures, the April, if you look at the spot VIX, it's $40 over the April future. That's unreal. I mean, these prices on these banks. You know, I just, how do you, as a trader, Kenny, when you say you don't do the same thing I do, I think that's baloney. You just do it a different way. I mean, when you sit there and go, it's the same thing as you saying, wow, you know, bank at $20 is one hell of a buy, but you're also going to say, okay, why is it $20? Because unlike most people in the world, you realize that whenever you buy 1,000 shares, somebody's eagerly selling you the value. You don't buy it from the market. You buy it from a person, right?
Well, that's true. You do, although, you know, you and I had this conversation as well, and actually I'm putting it in my note this morning that you're really buying it from an algorithm. And there's actually a front-page Wall Street Journal this morning story, which I would encourage everybody to read if you see it. I'm just going to give you the headline. It's right on the front page, and it says, why are markets so volatile? It's not just the coronavirus. And it goes into a whole description of the algorithmic models and the inputs that go into it that cause reactions by asset managers and traders and everyone else, that it's the algorithm that's, you know, that's pulling and creating all the chaos, which we know is happening. And so when you say, you know, if you want to buy 1,000 shares of J.P. Morgan, who's really selling it to you? Is it a human being or is it an algorithm? My mind, in this case, it's an algorithm.
Well,
you're right. Chaotic.
And I'm going to say it's double counted, okay, probably, because they're going to. But what I'm saying is whenever I used to lecture a lot, Kenny, I know you probably did too, but I'd always ask people, I said, you know, you want to buy, I used to use GE. How was that for an example? Oops. You want to buy some GE. You research it. You talk to your guy. You get your newsletter guy. You watch Kenny Polcari on CNBC. And all of a sudden, you go out there and you buy 1,000 shares of GE and you're good to go. And everybody's like, yeah. And I said, well, who do you buy it from? And they go, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, what makes you think the guy on the other side of the transaction who's just as anxious to sell it to you, what makes you think he didn't read one more article than you did? And he's right and you're wrong. And they look at you like you have two heads. I said, you're buying it from somebody, right? Every time, the other guy might be right. So what I'm saying is, you're going to say, I think Bank America is cheap at 20, and yet you see 90 bazillion shares offered at 20. You wonder, what do they know that I don't? Right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Because I'm wondering what this stuff's doing down here. And sure enough, last night after Boeing took down their, now that stock is absolutely getting driven, right, into the ground.
Yeah.
And, so last week they took the rest of their line of credit. They're up to $12.7 billion, and I think they got one hell of a rate on that, Kenny. So all of a sudden last night they get cut to one peg over junk, right?
Yeah, just above junk.
Yeah. So who are the idiot banks that gave those guys that kind of money at that rate? If now they're almost junk.
You know, that's like the same question you ask when WeWorks blew up and what's his name, the former CEO there had some ridiculous line of credit out with J.P. Morgan.
Yeah.
Ridiculous line of credit out with J.P. Morgan. You think to yourself, who would have in their right mind extended any single person that kind of credit? Because when it blew up, J.P. Morgan made sure that somehow they got their money back when it would have been nearly impossible for this guy to pay that money back. So you laugh when you see situations like that because you want to know who's really behind it, who's driving the bus.
Well, yeah, it's a... Anyway, Kenny, we'll let you go, bud. If you're lonely today and you need to call somebody,
yeah,
I'll be here. We could talk markets. Feel free to call in. Take care, buddy. SP Futures is only up $3 now. NASDAQ Futures up 50, so we're way down from where we were. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jobs Radio.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time to gain my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howe. She's AV on the board. SP Futures now were unchanged. Actually, we're down a dollar. We were just up. NASDAQ Futures down 34. So this is not good. We were up a bunch earlier. It looked like we were going to bounce back, and now we're not necessarily bouncing back. Do we have Jeff?
Yep, you do.
What's up, man? How are you?
Good morning, Tom.
What's up? Everything's up. I mean, have you ever? Do you think we can find something to talk about, Jeff?
There's a lot to talk about. we're maintaining a proper distance. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, we're it's interesting the distance part. But when you send people home, do they maintain their distance at home?
Yeah, well, that's one question. The other question is that of productivity. If you want to get into the reality of you know what small businesses are going to be going through as well now too. So I know it's not always the first thing you think about, but the ramifications of this are just going to be felt in so many different ways for so many months to come in terms of productivity, in terms of the economy, in terms of healthcare. Just there's so much uncertainty, and but we're going to learn a lot. That much is clearly the case. We're going to learn.
I think we're going to learn what we always learn, Jeff, is that some people do very well in crisis and other people not so good because some people make the decisions and others don't.
Yeah, and we also realize now those black swans are a lot more frequent than we thought. I think now, after, and I know Taleb, I'm a big fan of him, and I've met him before on a couple of occasions, and the black swan was always probably one of the books that I have highest regard for. Actually, his first book, Fooled by Randomness, I thought was particularly special. Black Swan was a little bit more commercial, but you know, once he came up with that metaphor, it's been applied by every commentator to every event, and now there are so many black swans, there's no black swans anymore, because everything can't be a black swan. If it is, it's, you know, they're not black swans, but in this case, it truly is. There's no question about it. And I guess what we end up learning is that you can't prepare. You know, you're never prepared. I mean, it's not like we haven't had viruses and pandemics at this level. H1N1 certainly was, and there were lessons that could have been learned from that virus that, you know, that were not learned. But instead of casting blame, it's just a question of trying to, you know, get a firm ground and move forward. And you know, I think if I have any regret to this more than the loss of business that hardworking people, particularly restaurant owners, it's a community I'm very sensitive to. I grew up in that industry. That was my family business forever and ever. And I know the hard work that goes into it, and I know what a loss of a weekend of revenue can do, let alone perhaps a couple of months or at least several weeks. But you know, it's just going to be a tough road ahead for a lot of folks right now.
And now's
not the time to be, you know, trying to cast blame for political purposes. I really think we should be trying to work together and find a way out of this.
I can't agree more. Except, somewhere at the end of the day, you know me pretty well, and you know I'm not a vindictive sort of guy. But I also, I mean, I'm getting up there. You know, it's not like I'm 25 anymore. My entire life, all I've seen is every one of these crises, every time something like this happens, Jeff, or even in the meantime, the same people steal the dough. And the same people end up in bad shape. Someday, somewhere, just once, I want to see those people pay for it.
Yeah,
and it's never going to happen. You know, maybe in your kid's lifetime or something, it will. I want the people who did the bad mergers solely for the intent of restraining trade and raising prices. I want them. I don't care if they go to jail for an hour. I want them in jail. I don't care if it's they don't need to be there forever.
They didn't see it in the financial crisis. The subsequent administration gave them a pass. And
yep.
And I agree. Well, I agree with you completely. You know, and half of that process, so we'll go off on that for a moment, it's not always as apparent as we think. As you know, in fact, you asked me to join you a couple of weeks after we published that recent China issue over at Luckbox magazine, and that was our focus. It was a hard-hitting issue because it dealt with China on infringement, on privacy, censorship, their mistreatment, well documented, of the of the Uyghur population, which is a Muslim population there, some of their geopolitical ambitions through the Belt and Road Initiative, the technology ambitions through Huawei and 5G, and we covered all of those issues very deeply in the issue, and provocative and hard-hitting, calling out China on what is clearly part of an ambition of theirs to surpass the U.S. as an economic power. And one of the contributors to the issue was Brigadier General John Spaulding, excuse me. And he wrote a book that everyone should read called The Stealth War. In fact, we named the most recent issue of Luckbox magazine, you know, The Stealth War with China. And afterwards, he commented, he received the issue, and he was pleased and thought that it was one of the rare occasions we've seen this comprehensive look at all the different fronts that China is engaging in a very competitive posture and aggressive warlike stance with Western democracies and American interests. Yet he had a criticism, and his criticism was you covered a lot, and I know your magazine can do so much, but you didn't speak to the manner in which we've handed over so many industries to China, who did it, why they did it, for what political gain and expediency, and what the cost of that. And he said particularly manufacturing, some rare metals that are used in technology, and of course healthcare, antibiotics and medical equipment. So he brought this to my attention as a critique of our own work about 2 months ago, after he saw the final drafts of the magazine getting ready to go to print. And sure enough, we're seeing that resonate and come back. It's a subject that some, I'm not sure why they're reluctant to speak to it, but there are some that are very reluctant to speak to, look back and say, you know, what did we do with Nixon and China? What did Bill Clinton do when we granted them this most favored nation? We did give away manufacturing. We did give away our medical industry. And now here we are reliant upon China for antibiotics and for masks and for ridiculous things. And that's going to be part of this overall accounting. But, of course, as you said, going back to your cynicism, the politicians are never held accountable. The corporate leaders aren't. And here we have outsourced healthcare and the well-being of our citizens to a government that, quite frankly, has antagonistic relationship with us.
We've let people. I'm listening to Carl once in a while when he's on the show. We've allowed the businesses that normally had to pay people a regular amount here to essentially offload pollution and child labor to China and other places. And where they pay people nothing, they make an absolute fortune, and all of a sudden we're compromised. I mean, there was a AV, I don't know, Angelica, if you could, dig out that thing you sent me that was another podcast. These guys actually film their podcast. I don't know if we want to do that, Jeff, but
yeah. Joe Rogan?
But there was a gentleman on there who was a guest, and he's, I don't think he's a government employee, but he's in a health think tank, for lack of a better term. And it was an interview for like 40 minutes about this virus and everything. And I've never heard more straight talk. And this guy, he says, it's not just the virus. He says, I was aware 85% of all the saline solution and everything in the country is made in like one area in Puerto Rico that's right in the way of a hurricane. And the place has no ability to come back from a hurricane. Their infrastructure, their power and everything's horrible. He goes, sure enough, there's a hurricane. He goes, virtually every generic drug is made in China. He goes, how could that be a problem? He goes, what are we out of our mind? I mean, it's right there in front of you. I mean, there's, like you're talking about, issue after issue. And you can tell me I'm nuts, which you don't have a problem doing, which is fine. I'm going to say that the China's response to this problem, where they say they've got it all figured out in Huawei, I'm going to say that they sent the people back to work, the young people that were sick. You might as well go to work. No point in staying home. The symptoms aren't that bad. And they just let the old people die. and they say they've arrested the problem and just kept people out of Beijing and the rest of the country. Is that, am I fairly close on that?
Well, of course, we don't know, but we are getting numerous reports that, particularly as we were doing the deep dive into this, into our China coverage, that the accounting for cases and confirmed deaths has been woefully inaccurate. Yeah, most people by now have seen the body bag videos that were snuck out of China. Most people now are aware that China is not counting a coronavirus case death as being a death from the virus if they never got to the hospital to get diagnosed to be a coronavirus patient. So their numbers are not anything to rely on, which is making things very difficult for modeling purposes here by the CDC. Their biggest problem is that they can't rely on China data. They can, so they're looking to Europe now for data. And that means your largest data set is a dirty data set. And that makes their modeling very, very difficult. So they don't know what to expect. One of the best resources, by the way, if listeners want to check it out, is John Hopkins. We started using it about a month ago.
I've been going there like every day. I've been looking
now it's showing up almost on every news, you know, every cable station at some point is flashing this interactive chart that is at coronavirus.jhu, as in John Hopkins University.edu. And it's an interactive map. You can click on any country, any state. You can see confirmed cases. And this is the data that everybody globally now is really relying upon as being the best scrub data out there. What data, you know, policymakers and healthcare decision makers are relying upon, that is that data.
If we don't, I mean, this is a cheap shot, if we don't drag the tests away from the sports teams, which seems to be able to get it at will, and go out and do a random sample of a city or a state, how will you know how big it is?
Yeah, we don't. We don't know yet, and that's, you know, and you see these photographs of the major airports, including Chicago's O'Hare this past weekend, and you're just sick to your stomach because you know, or you have fears, I should say, as to what's occurring when you have people standing shoulder to shoulder, you know, in airports where there's people coming from all over.
How can our people be that? You'd love to have been with us last night. Or I went to my favorite two places last time ever, right? So, of course, I drop into one of them, the Club Lago, and there's two attorneys.
Yeah, I love Club Lago. I didn't know you like that.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great place.
I found some of the most intelligent people. If ever you're by yourself and just want to drop in and have a conversation with either a really bright lawyer or architect or people, you drop in there and all of a sudden, you know, somebody's giving you a long story about what you can use scrap metal for and stuff. I mean, stuff that I love to listen to, you know. So for me, I love it. But my two lawyer buddies, one I know pretty well, the other guy I've met a couple times, totally opposite ends of the political scale, and both are concerned about shutting their law firms because now the Cook County courts, the idea of a court system going down for 30 days, of course, all those people get paid, right? But now the lawyers, these guys are talking about, okay, we can't send the person who makes $40,000 in the copy room home without pay for a month. So they're trying to figure out how much they have to cut pay of people up top, which is what regular people do. People in government never do. How much we have to cut the pay of people up top so we can pay the people on the bottom. So I mean, we're all working on these problems like basically last night. And it's funny, they're arguing about, of course, they're totally opposite ends of the political spectrum. And one guy is bitching a blue streak about Hunter Biden. And the other guy's, you know, countering with what about Flynn and Manafort and Trump's moldy kids and blah, blah, blah.
What aboutism, yes.
Yeah. So I said, can I get in the middle of this for a second? I said, what about someday, somewhere, somebody is in charge for just a minute? And he says, okay, both you guys, stop your bickering for a second. Let's get three or four other people from both sides of the aisle and just shut the bleep up until I tell you what I want done. I want you to get some help, a random sample of five countries that we give money to in the U.S. and let's follow the money to those places and find out whose fingers are in the pot. And if it's my kid, your kid, we're getting them the hell out of there. Let's figure out how much of the $500 million we send to Ukraine or Guatemala or wherever the damn place is, how much of it actually reaches these people and how much of it are with the carpetbaggers that follow it down there. I want it stopped. I don't care whose kid it is. That's the problem. It's not, I mean, if there's money to be had there, sure, the people who are closest to the action know the money's there and their kids are going to follow it, or somebody close to them is going to follow, whether it's their kids or not. Why don't we just stop anybody from doing that? And anybody does it, they all go to jail. Why don't we send a message sometime, some way? I mean, the thing that pisses me off, I read this, I don't know if I sent it around everybody, if you're on the Stacks and Jacks list around, it was a New York Times article regarding ventilators. How is it, Jeff, that with all the money we spent after 9/11, and all these things are the same, it could be a virus, it could be a chemical bomb, it could be a dirty bomb, it could be a bio thing, it could be anything. It's all about treating
people. It requires
people.
An ICU response, yeah.
It requires a major expanse in one spot. And if the spot's too small, get those people the hell out of there somehow to another place where they can do some there. They're all the same, right? I mean, whether it's a hurricane, whatever it is. And yet, how is it that we have a third as many ventilators per capita as South Korea and less than Italy? How the hell do we have less ventilators per capita than Italy? After we spent all this stuff.
It's impossible to imagine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we spent it somewhere. Who got it? How much did 90% of the dollar? Are we talking about? I used to. I told you the story about one of my more interesting clients. I won't say wacky. Says, you know, I was looking at the. Remember the story about the all the bearer bonds that all these old countries used to put out. Actually, Germany put them out.
Yep.
Well, he says, why don't you see if you can sell some of these? And my buddy's got some. So of course, me like a terrier to a bone, like I am. I go, I'm never gonna sell one of these things, Jeff, right? Because if other people can't do it, how the hell am I gonna do it just starting today? But of course, using my personality, which isn't so horrible, I managed to get five or six of my new best friends all around the world. And I learned so much about this inter-country project stuff where if you're, guys were telling me that if you are building a, water treatment plant like Bill Gates wants to do in, you know, Sudan someplace. If you just send the money, you're lucky if 10 cents of the dollar makes it to the water treatment plant, either getting stolen here or there. Because if you're big enough to have boots on the ground to actually follow it and secure the site, you'll probably get 50 cents actually getting into the project. And this is the amount of stealing going on in this between country stuff is talk about epidemic. Pandemic, it's unbelievable. And it's the same people. You got to pay the dictator in his Zurich bank account to put up a water treatment plant in his country. And people do it. You know, it's like something, this whole, somehow, Jeff, somebody's got to straighten this out. I mean, and I think that a lot of this money from 9/11, well, I don't think we have anything that we've supposedly bought that you could actually put your finger at.
Well, you're articulating the angst that got Trump elected. You're articulating the angst that should have provided a stronger platform for Bernie Sanders. You know, it's this the kind of this idea of a swamp and clean everything out and start over. You know, I think some of the commentators, particularly the Democratic leaning ones, misunderstand this populace. They do want a revolution. I know that the left leaning media that is concerned about the fact that Bernie might not be a great challenger to Trump was really backing Biden, and you know that, I think that's pretty evident. But boy, they are missing the boat as to, and then of course you know Trump has failed on so many levels, so that's obvious. I'm not speaking to that, but the angst remains, right? So what got Trump in, that angst remains, and now it's going to reach a new intensity as a result of everything you just articulated and throw this virus in as well.
Did you happen to watch
not about his response, It's just about not being able to do all the things that clean up this mess that you just alluded to. Then you have somebody threatening to blow it all up, like Sanders, and he can't get the traction. I think the result of all this, and then look at, you know, where we're going now. You talk status quo, you might as well tattoo those words on Joe Biden's forehead.
Well, I think you put the status quo on either Trump or Biden. Neither one of them is going to go after the prescription drug companies. Neither one of them is going to.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. No. I'm agreeing with you, I'm saying that the result of once again, an election. I mean, there was optimism obviously with Trump, but he let us down on other levels. He, you know, to his credit, he did pursue trying to take down some of the bigger players. But as you just noted, where he really could earn his street cred was with the NRA and the pharmaceutical companies, and he couldn't do it because of constituency
Hey, Jeff,
and politics.
Jeff, when we come back.
So he let us down, and I think voter angst after this next general election is just going to reach an all-time high.
Jeff, when we come back from break, I'll even write this down. Let's expand on that because you're going down a road that I think we need to travel. SP Futures, they were just unchanged, and now they're up 23. So we're bouncing around, but they were up a lot more than that earlier. NASDAQ futures up 96, Dow futures up 293. We'll be right back. I got every stock in the Dow up today, not as much as it was down yesterday. We'll come back. We'll talk more about what we were just talking about, and we're going to get Jeff's view on the banks. We're going to get Jeff's view on Boeing. Wow, one step above junk. Unbelievable. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's AV on the board. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph with us as well, engaging in good conversation like we always do with the very intelligent Jeff Joseph in Luckbox Magazine. If you guys don't read it, you're doing yourself a disservice. Seriously. S&P futures up 25, NASDAQ futures up 100, so we're bouncing back up here a little bit. We were up as much as, I think, 75 in the S&Ps last night, and then we were down a few minutes ago, but now we bounced right back up again. Dow's up 298. Every stock in the Dow 30 is up. Not near as much as they were down yesterday. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 99, 1.1%. FTSE down 71, 1.4%. CAC around down 41, 1%. We're in Asia, mixed bag and very slow. Nikkei up 9 points, call that flat. Shanghai down 9.3%. Hang Seng up 200.8%. Wait a minute, we better give everybody just a little bit of as much as it did hold your nose yesterday. 29.97 down on the Dow. It's 12.9%. We're talking presidents getting assassinated numbers when you're talking about 10, 12, 11% in the Dow. I mean, those are big, big numbers. S&P futures down 324, that's 12%. NASDAQ down 970, 12.3%. So yesterday was not a day to sneeze at all. We've got bonds actually going the other way after the Fed did their stuff. Their 0.81 is the 10-year rate. The Bund is minus 0.39. It was minus 0.78 Friday. Okay. Japan is almost even, minus 0.001. So they're actually going to go positive in this whole mess. Oil up 20 cents, 28.90. That's not a sustainable number for a lot of oil firms. It's probably one of the reasons why you're seeing these banks, everybody a little concerned about them. And we've got gold going down as well, down $3, 14.83. It went through 1700 hours, I'm going to say a week ago yesterday. So that's a drop there. Silver down 31 cents. Copper can't get out of its own way. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather? And you know, I know you don't like to do the sports. You don't have to do the sports anymore.
Well, for weather, we got a nice day. Should be sunny, no rain expected. The high of the day is 15, the low is 35. Unsettled weather returns to close out the week, even some storms possible on Thursday. 57 degrees currently in Phoenix, mostly sunny day, partially cloudy. Slight chance of rain shower at night. The highest of the day should be 74 and the lowest 55. And in traffic, we have a stall reported on Eisenhower West before Racine Avenue. It's causing some slight traffic. Other than that, no issues, no delays on traffic. Chip.
Jeff, we were talking about things. Did you happen to watch after the election? They had four of the younger freshman senator representatives from the Democratic Party on with what's her name, O'Connor, and she faced the nation or whatever. Anyway, this poor black lady who had this horrible cold. I don't think she had this virus, but she had a cold. She could barely talk, which she had her day in the sun and couldn't talk. They had two other guys, and then there was this one guy. Jeff, the dude looked just like Putin. I don't know if I'd wish that on many people, but the guy was real bright. And so she says to him, Margaret Brennan, says, what was your campaign? And he goes, well, that's easy. I ran the same campaign Trump did. Washington basically sucks, and I'm going to go straighten it out. And he goes, that's the campaign. It still sucks. Put Trump there. It's the same thing. Obama ran on. He didn't do anything. Trump didn't do anything. And now I'm trying to do something. I mean, I know I'm just here a week, But what you were talking about, I mean, I actually thought, like you, that maybe is it if we yank Trump out of there and put Lincoln or Roosevelt or Teddy Roosevelt or George Washington in there, are these guys so in like a tick on a dog that I don't care who it is, you can't get them out of there? And Bobby Kennedy tried, and he got killed. What can you do against Boeing? I mean, we've given them the monopoly. What can you do about from Merck and these other guys? We've let them buy every other firm. I mean, can anybody really do anything?
No. No. Obviously, it's the system has been built to protect those within it, and there's always, you know, just not to get on a tangent rant, you have to ask a direct question, but I've always maintained there's some things that are just so simple to repair that will never happen just because of the vested interests that prevent them from happening. To me, the two fixes to almost all of our problems come down to a flat tax, and that's only because of it's not meant to be progressive or regressive, or it's not a statement about taxation or the role of government or the size of government. It's all about what's been built around the tax code, those thousands of pages in our tax code and the tax courts and the tax attorneys, and that a flat tax that eliminated that entire ecosystem and all the interests that go along with it would result in a greater market efficiency on many levels and less vested interest vying for and lobbying for tax incentives and tax dollars, et cetera. A simple flat tax where the government's not making any decisions to underwrite any specific activity in any manner. That's off topic from your question.
What is on topic is
the other fix, and that's term limits. You know, that was the whole idea initially of the Constitution was the notion of public service, not a career. And we all know, it's well documented, from the day that someone's elected, that they spend more days a week fundraising than they do in policy making. And that fundraising is intended only for them to continue to secure their office. They don't feel that there's a check and balance system. There's redistricting that allows people to stay in long after their constituents have tired of them. And unless term limits is truly, you know, because who has the incentive? And one thing about Trump was he was an inspiration to all of us who follow politics carefully, who have a sentiment like what you just expressed that says, boy, I'd love to go in and just fix that up. I'm in business. I know some of the things you do. You cut the waste. I mean, let's face it. Who doesn't believe for a minute that you couldn't come in and cut every single budget by 20%? Across the board. No favoritism for our military, no favoritism for Medicaid. Don't tell me that there isn't 20% waste in every single budget that exists. No one could ever convince me of that.
I will.
Yet those kind of things can't happen because there's not people, like business-oriented people, that are going to go in and look at those and make those decisions. It's not going to happen. And Trump was the hope, but then he wasted that hope that the outsiders could come in, perform public service, and go back to private practice. On different levels. And listen, I still support many of the actions of this president on policy, but there's no way you can support his demeanor or his style, and it matters. So those making that Faustian trade of style and substance. It's a package, you know. I mean, it's a package. So he's failed us, and unfortunately, it's going to be much harder for outsiders to come in going forward. I mean, I can't imagine anything more dreadful than accepting a status quo, bought and paid for China-like advocate of like Joe Biden to become our next president. But that's likely going to happen because of the goodwill that Trump squandered when he was brought in to perform this revolution.
I hate like hell to give the guy some kudos, but I don't think anybody can do it, Jeff. I have two big issues with the Constitution that are maybe more basic than yours.
Well, not to jump, but I'll give you this back. I think you could do it if you knew that you were going to be out in 2 or 4 years, regardless of whatever you did.
I think they outweigh
maybe
you.
Maybe you just focus on the bottom line.
I think they outweigh
you. You know, and focus on making things right. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying I'm not that big on the term limit part, because I think some of the jobs, for instance, if you're a representative and you're putting together the agriculture bill or the communication bill, that's a 5-year project. You can't have people going in on and off every 2 years and stuff like that. Here's where I'm coming from. I have two issues with the Constitution that I think if we fix them, I don't think the term limit problem would be as big. Okay. By the way, I also happen to think that, and I'm probably preaching to the choir, there's been more turnover in the House in the last 10 years than there probably ever has been. Because people get in there and say they can't do anything and they're gone. Because the people up top have so much power. They look at the people here that have two terms and say the hell with it. We'll never go back. So, I mean, the turnover in the House is not... Well, here's where I'm going with this. I think the Constitution could not have anticipated, even though some I use the term moron, will probably argue with me, not you, and say I'm wrong on this because our founding fathers anticipated everything. No, they didn't. I don't think they anticipated, Jeff, the modern corporation, which, by the way, is a terrific invention, but it never dies. In 1780, whenever the hell these guys were writing the thing, you and I sat there, and we might not have been the most honest people on earth. We're just regular guys. We happen to be pretty honest, probably more than most of the people sitting in the room writing the thing. But they knew human nature. They also knew that with 400 and some people in the House and 100 people in the Senate and 9 Supreme Court guys and then the whole executive branch, be hard, pretty hard for you and I from Carolina or wherever we're coming from to rig the system. By the time we got 50 people on our side, it might be 5 years and we're all dead or something. You know, see, but a corporation never dies. They actually can influence every single person in Congress if they're big enough and have the money. I don't think anybody ever anticipated that. And plus, I really don't think that if you and I are sitting up in Vermont or New Hampshire, why did I put us up there? Because we seem like those kind of guys. The chances of us getting our fanny on horseback and scooting down to Carolina and messing with a representative election down there and trying to buy it are like, you know, one in a gazillion, right? Yet now that happens all the time, where we have money from outside the district. You're concerned, and rightly so, with people that are in Congress for a long time being bought off. I'm saying that because of the way it's done now, you're bought off before you get in there. And if you're a judge, you might have State Farm being your biggest, and I have State Farm insurance, might be your biggest contributor. So, and in this day and age, judges are so dumb, people are so dumb when it comes to, now don't say all people are dumb, our morality has changed so much that judge today probably didn't, now if it was in our day, Jeff, you're not as old as me, you would recuse yourself from that case. Now they don't. They say, what do you mean? That's why I'm here, in case a State Farm case ever came by. It's a whole different, it's a different world. And I'm not so sure that the term limit piece is a very small part of it, because I don't think these guys, you don't have to be there 20 years now to be bought off. It's before you even run, I think.
Well, there are elements of that I agree with, but I think whenever living on the public dole becomes a career choice, the notion of public service is lost.
Well, know? I mean, I would say that I don't know how many terms Paul Simon was in there. I don't think he ever got co-opted. I mean, he came back. He wasn't a millionaire when he came back. He went back to his town in Southern Illinois and taught at the local college until he croaked with his bow tie. I don't think Chuck Percy ever got co-opted. I don't think Paul Douglas ever did. I don't think Adlai Stevenson ever did. I mean, we got a long string of really pretty good guys.
Although, you look at Biden and McConnell, and they are the poster boys for being co-opted.
Well, you've got, you know, Phil Graham. His wife was on the Enron board, for God's sake. And she was head of what? What's the one where you're supposed to spank everybody? Not the finance chair or whatever, the one where you're supposed to be watching corporate behavior. Wouldn't you see the chair of that?
Right.
Whatever the term is. And she comes back and ends up being what? The Secretary of Transportation or something?
Yes.
And what's her name?
Lynn Chow.
And the same. And she's from the Bank of America board. Could there be a worse board, for God's sake? And she comes back and she's, you know, I mean, and that's what's his name's wife. And Joe Biden, what's his name? Is it true? I mean, I've said this a couple of times. I've got the article, but is it true that Bernie bought the books, the campaign bought the books from him personally and handed out books? And how all these guys now, when you can't take the campaign money, because my question, Jeff, you were in here a couple of times, how are these guys making all this money? They never used to be able to. Now, all of a sudden, now I'm hearing that if all of a sudden you're a senator and you got this huge campaign fund, which you're not supposed to take personally, you become the marketing agent for your own ads. So you're getting the 20% kickback, or your wife is. So if you spend $5 million in ads, you're taking $1 million of it because that's normally what you give to an advertising firm, and you become the advertising firm. Well, that blows.
Well, if that's true, that's abhorrent.
Well, I think it is. Where else are they getting the dough? Every one of these guys became a millionaire in office.
Mm-hmm.
Or ladies. Is that it's usually the significant other that's probably getting the deal, but sometimes it's them. And how you're making $400,000 a year? You got two houses. How in God's name? And you're supposed to have some money and drive around like you know something. Not drive an old truck like me. I mean, I like my old truck. But the point being is, how does Bernie became a millionaire in office? I mean, how about Joe Biden? He's not poor anymore. Obama sure did. I mean, what are we doing here? Right? I'm just.
Well, that's why you and there's a plug here that comes from that. That's one of the reasons I've become so fascinated by the political prediction markets. We've talked about them before. There's a site called predictit.org, which is a nonprofit that's operating under an exemption letter from the CFTC because they're using the data for academic purposes to study the efficacy of crowdsourced intelligence for predictive forecasting models. Yet the short of it, it allows anybody to wager on the outcome of political events up to $850 a contract. And we've been following this closely at Luckbox Magazine and recently became enthralled with it about half a year ago. They're adding 5,000 traders every month. There's over 200,000 people trading on this site. This weekend I must have day traded for several hours, just day trading election, primary outcomes, because it's a fascinating model. And, you know, first of all, you compare it to 538 in terms of its predictive models. We started a podcast, which I mentioned to you, called The Political Trade. The Political Trade is the name of the podcast. And we have these kind of super traders that come on, have been trading in these markets for 4 or 5 years. The last episode was titled, How I Turned $400 into $400,000. And it's a guy that we interviewed out of North Carolina, 35 years old, and he provided all the account records to verify his $400 account. I traded up to $400,000 just trading on politics. And he was on a radio show a couple days ago, and he said, let's say about 2 weeks ago, Trump was 53 cents. You know, these are binary options, so it basically meant 53% of the prediction market thought he's going to win the general election. And it was 57 at that day, because Trump was a big favorite in the prediction markets only 2 months ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then only about a month ago, he was still at 57. And he said, I expect as this virus begins to spread, you can short or buy the nose on Trump at 57, and you can pick up at least 5 to 8 cents. And sure enough, as I'm looking at it right now, he is down to 47 cents. No, I'm sorry, 44 cents, and Biden has taken the lead at 48 cents. And these markets are fascinating because every aspect of politics and the primaries, and they're even trying to figure out how to create some markets about the virus and its spread without it being, you know, a morbid wager on people's mortality, right? Because this does have predictive elements that is useful in data gathering and forecasting. And we're just completely enthralled by these markets. And as a trader, I would think you would too. I mean, they're just... I have to admit, I've been taken in completely by them, you know, and just watching them and how these markets move.
Well, I think they. What do you think we're doing in the regular markets, Jeff? I mean, you know, I mean, we start talking about these insurance.
Well, it's one of the reasons because of the way the regular markets have been moving. I mean, you know, sometimes unless you're a hyper day trader, you really have to step aside when markets are moving as they have for the last 10 days in the U.S. stock markets. It's really difficult to navigate these kind of markets. I'm not kind of the buy and hold, you know, mindless buy and hold advocate. I do believe in a more active strategy because I have that background and doing the kind of things that you do for your clients, that active hand, particularly in moments like this, is really, really important because it allows you to be opportunistic. It allows you to create additional risk measures that the buy and hold people just don't have. But at the same time, you can't aggressively, you know, day trade a market like this because of the volatility uncertainty. It's another reason why these prediction markets have proved to be a nice little respite for me because they're smaller amounts, but they're meaningful amounts. And who doesn't? It's about time. I guess this whole conversation started by the fact that you're right. We're getting fleeced by our politicians. They've ignored the public trust for so long. It's about time we made some money off of them. And quite frankly, that's what's happened. I've more than doubled my account since it opened up only a couple months ago. And it's a lot of fun. You guys should, you know, check it out, predictit.org.
The only way you can...
The prediction markets, it's a non-for-profit, but they've got to be killing it because the volume of trading that's going through this site right now going into the general election is amazing. And our podcast, the Political Trade, hope you listen to it. All we do is interview expert traders who are, you know, using the prediction markets.
Gee, I've never been interviewed.
Well, you got to start opening an account. In fact, there's a promo code.
I'm
you
just kidding.
Put in $20, you get a free $20.
What you were on your account?
Yeah.
What you're alleging to in the current state of the market. We've got a couple minutes, but I'm not going to go into a. You can, Jeff, if you're willing to pay the price, and set yourself up for a little bit of protection beforehand, you can absolutely be a trader in these kind of markets. I think successfully.
Oh, yes, a professional can, but a retail investor really, that's where, the markets are brainwashed and the big companies like Vanguard and Schwab and Fidelity, for purposes that make sense, they've kind of brainwashed investors that the only thing you do is buy and hold and
right.
that you can do everything yourself. You know, look at Robinhood, right?
Yeah.
Do it yourself. They have these little trendy commercials. It's time to do money. Whatever the hell that means, right? It's time to do money. Yet, if you were doing money on Robinhood's app in three of the last 3 weeks, 3 days, the most active trading sessions over the last decade, you couldn't do money because the app locked up,
right.
affecting 8 million account holders who could not sell during the biggest market declines we've seen in 10 years. So, you know, and this is an industry that's conflicted itself to teach you somehow that you don't need help. And a professional can actively, you know, navigate these markets, particularly now. That's when you want professional help, you know. So, yeah, I agree with you. I don't disagree.
But you could.
But I don't think, the average retail investor could successfully day trade markets like we saw yesterday.
Well, the regulatory group is skewed to the point where if you go to somebody and they charge you 1% and you're 90 years old and they make you your entire $1 million they put in long stock and you drop 30% in 3 weeks, that's okay. God help you if you bought, like, some put protection for somebody and the market didn't go down. Well, you wasted their money. Yeah, it's pretty scary.
You could use those put protection now, right?
Oh, yeah, well, it's... Jeff, thank you very much, buddy. We'll have you, hopefully, maybe one of these weeks, we'll see you back in the office. I'll make your microphone at least 6 feet away from me. Matter of fact, I just measured it. It's 7 feet, so you'd have been okay. But
it is 7 feet. Yeah.
Anyway, well,
I'm just seeing you over there.
Weather the storm.
But been listening anyways, and keep it up, and I'll look forward to joining you soon.
I was going to say, we need to get together. Where could we even get together?
Club Lago.
They're closed.
Well, yes. All right, they are closed. But when they reopen,
you know what? We need
I'll
to
see you there.
You know what? We need to get one of these private clubs. Yeah. Anyway, take care of yourself. But SP Futures now up 35. NASDAQ Futures up 126. So we're bouncing to the upside here again. Maybe we'll actually stay there. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.